So we have 23 questions so far.
Wow.
So 24. Jenda's got another one. So I'm going to hand over, and we'll, I guess, one of the Maharajas will pick out the first question. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.
I'll put that there, and then whoever's. Okay. Perhaps you can just go in order, you know.
Okay. Here's a question from, we won't read the name. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the performance of devotional service is like a razor's edge. Sometimes the association of devotees is also like that. He didn't say that, the devotee writing the question. They can simultaneously be the cause of our liberation and awakening our dormant love for Krishna, but also be the cause of our fall down if we don't deal with them properly. Since we naturally have the tendency to find fault, it's sometimes difficult not to project that tendency on devotees, willingly or unwillingly. If one is constantly in the association of devotees, how to carefully guard against this? Okay. Well, yes, good point. It's true. Well, you know what they say, old habits die hard. They really do. And, yeah, the tendency to commit offenses, shall we just say, is there. And it takes time. So how to carefully guard against this? To guard against our propensity to find fault? This is the question. How to stop ourselves finding fault? Well, here's a suggestion. I suggest you learn the 26 qualities of a devotee. And then when you're associating, when you're in the company of devotees, you try to observe a devotee. There he is. Look at him. And try to see how that devotee is actually exhibiting one or some of the qualities of a devotee. In a sort of conscious way, systematic way. And then when you've done that, because definitely those qualities, one or some, will be there because the person's a devotee. And then once you've seen that, such and such has this quality or that, then a nice thing to sort of drive it deeper into the heart is go and compliment that devotee. I saw you doing this, I saw you doing that. It was very nice. Thank you very much for being a good example of Krishna consciousness. Something like this. In this way, we're developing a new habit in personal dealing. And if you see your mind getting into fault finding, well, of course, you may have to get a little sort of be conscious of it and try to control it. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur recommends this in regard to the 10 offenses. Rather than just think, I must not blaspheme, I must not blaspheme, I must not think that Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are equal to Krishna. You know, rather than sort of trying to stop ourselves so much, rather we do the opposite. Do the opposite. Glorify the devotees. And, you know, so on like that. So similarly with this. We're prone to find faults. Do the opposite. Find the good qualities. And then express them. This is my suggestion. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
What's that for me?
I've heard so many times senior devotees always say, if you will do this or that, you will not be able to get the blessings of Krishna. You are offending him, and you will be punished. How true is that?
The Rasamuni.
Yeah, that's a good one, isn't it? Wow. Well, you learned what not, a little bit what not to do in the drama just now. Krishna. But Krishna's punishment, for the way, is also a blessing. Have you finished? And it may be called punishment from a different point of view. If we can learn from that. So the senior, when we say senior devotees, this is the definition of terminology, really. Senior by time, by age, by what, that depends. But if it's a genuine thing, that somebody is actually in a position of spiritual authority, spiritual maturity or so on, advises us not to do something. It may not be that they're, I don't know if they say it so heavily as that, but you will not get the blessings of Krishna. You will be punished. Sounds a bit Christian. Damned if you don't, surrender and drink the blood or whatever you're supposed to do, we've had too many pakoras, and we're going to be punished. It's not Krishna's. What is Krishna's desire? He's not here to punish us. He's here to re-establish his religious, as we may not be thinking of him, but he's thinking of us. He wants to bring us back to Godhead. So whatever happens, even a so-called senior devotee saying something, whatever it may be, if we can take it positively, we can take it as an opportunity to become humble or to become, dependent upon Krishna. Whatever it may be, to say that you're going to be punished for not doing it is another thing. Krishna's always acting, really, he's always acting for our welfare. He's not acting to condemn any devotee, but as soon as the person comes to Krishna consciousness movement, Krishna takes personal interest in that devotee. And he's arranging things to help us gradually. And if you really want to look at it, like Srila Prabhupada, you could say he got punished. In a sense, his business went bankrupt, his family life, in one sense, fell apart, he struggled alone in Delhi and in Vrindavan and this and that. But of course, transcendental, but from the point of view of an example, we can say this is coming in. Here comes that mystical brew again. Is that your brew? And Krishna's was acting for the world well. It's not like that, But take it positively. You can take it positively if somebody says that to us, and you'll thank you very much for helping to purify my heart or something. Let's see it positively. Exactly. If it's just going on a regular basis, I don't think it should happen to that. But if that is the case, then try to see how Krishna's hand's working. But it's not that Krishna's going to automatically punish us in the way that you may think of punishment. He may purify us. Punishment is the rod of chastisement or whatever you want to call it. It's a purificatory process. It's not that suffering is purification. Sometimes we do suffer a little bit, but it's actually for our purification. Mm-hmm. You can't understand how Krishna's hand and everything. But it's so worried about trying to measure of it in detail. Krishna.
What
do?
If you've done it, put it back here, and then pass it on, and we'll just
keep it going out in circles.
Generally, when we are envious of someone, our envy increases when we hear the glories of that person. But when we see that despite our envy of Krishna, or his devotees, his same hearing about their glories actually awakens attachment to them. How does this miraculously come about? My understanding is that there are three modes of nature which are controlling everybody in the material world. And Krishna gives direction in the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedic scriptures how to elevate ourselves through the modes. So it's already inbuilt. If we perform activities in the mode of ignorance, then we'll become degraded. And so the mode of ignorance is, you know, envy of someone. And if we follow the Shastra and follow activities of the mode of goodness, automatically it's designed so that we become elevated. You know, the whole thing is built on association. Whatever we associate with, then we become like that. So even if the, you know, the mind and intellect, if it's associating with activities of the mode of goodness, it will become situated in the mode of goodness. This is, you know, Krishna's arrangement. And for a devotee, you know, Krishna takes personal care. When he sees that a devotee needs help, then he'll give correction. So, you know, for anybody who's in the material world, the mode of goodness is purifying. Even for a devotee and who's not very experienced, the mode of goodness is working. But, you know, the ultimate thing is that Krishna starts to take personal care of a devotee and purifies him from within. Tesham evanukampasam ahamagantam tamaha nasyam atman bhavasto jnana deepena bhavastaha. So Krishna says the person, well, the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura explains that it's Krishna who personally comes into a devotee's heart and purifies him from wrong activities. So either way, we do the right things, we become accustomed to working in that mode and we gradually are elevated.
Please say something about the transcendental nature of Sri Giriraj being Hari Dev and Hari Das. Hari Bol. A happy question. Happy questions are important too. Because if you get good answers, then you become happy. Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting. Srila Jiva Goswami puts it in a nice way in his Sankalpa Drima. He says, if you ask Krishna, who is God? Krishna says, me. But if you ask Balaram, who is God? Balaram says, Krishna. Yeah. He can say me too, because it's true. But he doesn't. He says Krishna, because his mood, he's in the mood of a devotee. So in very simple terms, Govardhan Giriraj is Krishna, as Balaram is Krishna, but he's in the mood of a devotee, as are all the different forms of the Lord except Krishna. Krishna is in the mood that I am God. All the other forms of the Lord, they have this mood of being servants of Krishna. So Giriraj, yeah, it's like that. He's a form of Krishna, so he's Hari Dev, the Lord. But he's in the mood of serving the Lord. He provides grass for the cows, nice sitting places, water from the waterfalls for Krishna and the cows, caves for Krishna and Radharani, flowers for making garlands for Krishna, and all sorts of things. So he's Hari Das. But at the same time, he's the Lord. So he's Hari Dev. It's interesting, it's in our Govardhan book, which I wrote, but I forget where I got this point from. The point is that somebody says, someone of the big guys. somebody says that Haridane, that particular form of the Lord, Haridane, who's the lifter of the hill, actually, he has the mood of being a father towards his devotees. He has a paternal mood. So there you go. Shri Giri Raj Govardhan Ki.
Very great. Here's what I'm not sure what this one means. World Holy Name Festival, 17th to the 24th of September, 2018. Srila Prabhupada uniting the world, okay? Very good. Yeah, look, just to confirm that's correct. 17th to the 24th of September, 2018, World Holy Name Festival, okay?
I think I know whose one that was.
You do?
Yeah.
Whose was that?
That was yours.
Oh, was it my question? I gave the question, I gave the answer to it. The only thing, I'll tell you, the only one I'm going to be able to answer tonight, I think. These questions are like, wow. But sometimes we have to look to the solution again. Some of these questions, a lot of it is maybe we're missing the sangha. Sometimes we forget to read Prabhupada's books, you know. Sometimes we forget to hear from Prabhupada or hear the holy name when we chant Hare Krishna. We expect to find an answer, you know, to all my problems. And we're not even, you know, taking the medicine. It's like going to the doctor and getting medicine. You don't take the medicine, you go back and say, well, you know, I'm still sick. Give me the answer. You know, we got a medicine. Okay, there may be other things too, but they're unlimited. And in a society like, for instance, this question, they're all important. Is it important in Krishna consciousness to have personal, reciprocated exchanges within a community? What do you think?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We have a yes over here. Anyone else got another suggestion?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. No. That means no, or no other suggestions. Okay. So it probably is. Otherwise, it's not really a community, is it? Communal. Community. It's got to be exchanged. So what are those exchanges? Is it exchanges on the material platform or not? Maybe to some extent. And there you may find some friction sometimes, but conditioned it. If you don't get this, how to continue going there without causing aparad? Well, I'm not quite sure what the community exchanges or reciprocative exchanges are. The essence which we were hearing this morning, at least, I think, was that those exchanges are we come together and hear and chant about Krishna. That's the essential fact. Or do service together, isn't it? Isn't that the idea? You know, especially chanting together. Infallible means of sadhana. How can you continue there without causing aparad? Well, what is an aparad? What is aparad?
An offense.
Pardon?
Offense, something that takes you away from Radha.
Really, it could be literally translated, it is against Radha, literally. So, you know, what does Radharani like?
Pleasing Krishna.
Does she like us arguing? Does she like us staying away? Did she like us gossiping? Would she like that?
No.
What do you think?
No.
So, you know, it's quite simple. She likes to hear Krishna glorified, doesn't she? That's what the temples are for. I mean, yeah, in community life there are many things that may have to be dealt with. But then how far do we go? And she says, Tito, but the essential feature of the community is that which brings us closer to Krishna. And what is the means of bringing us closer to Krishna is the process of hearing and chanting. Coming together, facilitating the process at our temples. Our places, Nectar of Instruction, you can read, which is specifically meant to facilitate the hearing and chanting, that people will come and engage in hearing and chanting. This will actually start to solve the problems. If that's not going on, this is the thing. Sometimes, or it is going on, and we're not taking advantage, it'll be very difficult to see through the darkness, or see the wood for the trees. It's going to be complicated and confusing. And we're coming from confusing backgrounds. We've all got our different baggage, you know. So we have to somehow or another work together. That's the whole idea of the Krishna conscious movement. To work together with Krishna Center, try to engage in service and chant Hare Krishna Come on, Harinam Sankirtan, do things together. You know, have kirtan together, cook together, take off the prasad, we've been hearing about it before, Sankirtan and Nopsan. Basically, how do you practice if there isn't any genuine care, reciprocation? How do we practice if there isn't any genuine care? Well, there should be, otherwise it's not really a community. We have to cultivate that. They sit down, we're supposed to have istigos to discuss, and, you know, actually share, or, you know, discuss how we can improve this, you know, accept. Do we just accept it as our karma? No. Why, if we chant the devotional service, do we lack this basic human skill of compassion? Why, if we chant, do an undo devotional service, do we lack this basic human skill of compassion? It's like Maharaj was saying just now, old habits die hard. You know, it takes time. It takes time before our heart becomes softened. We start to appreciate others, and appreciate the privilege of devotional service, and so on and so forth, not be so affected by the minor shortcomings or what we see as shortcomings of others, and become more appreciative and more absorbed in our service. And so we're not so much affected by all the comings and goings. They're all temporary. We've got to try to look at the permanent feature of the community of Krishna consciousness, and not just the temporary effects only. Sure, there are many temporary effects, and we should try to deal with them by the proper means of communication, having stagostis and what have you, and discussing it. And revealing our mind in confidence, if it's a personal issue, and so on and so forth. So we gradually grow. It means that maybe some offense is there in our devotional service or our chanting, so sometimes it's slowed up. And again, in discussion, sitting down with the devotees and chanting nicely together, nice kirtan together, you know, just trying to awaken that positive mood, reciprocation, on a platform which is not just based upon our false egos, but based upon what pleases Radharani. Hare Krishna.
Krishna.
You get the word holy name with you, have these little tickets here, which you can take with you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is, please, what is your advice to someone who has been in an abusive relationship, both physically and emotionally? I'm still in that relationship, but I am finding it very difficult to build up the trust again. I only request your advice, guidance, and guidance. Please guide me so that I can help myself and my children. Thank you. We always have, in the past we've had answers like, just chant the Hare Krishna mantra, become purified, which will solve all problems. And it will eventually, there's no doubt. But, you know, in a situation like this, we have to realise that we're not always able to digest the process enough to practice it. And so we need help. And in this situation, there are, you know, senior Grihastha devotees will experience this to some degree themselves. And if they're senior, they'll be able to, if we take shelter of those devotees, if we have that trust in them, then we can, you know, negotiate our way through these problems. And also, we also may need professional help. It's not wrong to take professional help. There are people who are dealing with these things as part of their daily life. You know, they're well versed, they understand the mechanics and psychology, and so they're able to deal with it on a Krishna conscious level, but on a human level, and in that way we can start to, you know, deal with the problem. And at the same time, we're also practicing the process of devotional service. And the two things together will eventually, you know, deal with it nicely. You know, there's two parallel lines in devotional service. One is our material necessities and needs we have to deal with, and our spiritual needs, and Srila Prabhupada told us that, you know, they both have to be not counterproductive, but they both have to be assisting one another. And so we have to see that we may need that professional guidance, or at least guidance from senior devotees. That's the best situation.
Yeah, I thought that was a very good answer to a, you know, very serious question. Okay, so here we have another question. One part of it, there's some sort of grammatical lack of clarity. I'm going to skip over that. But I think the question will still be complete enough. It is said that we should not disrespect senior devotees. But how can we find out if someone is a senior devotee? Should we rather respect a devotee as just a devotee, or by the class of seniority? Okay. We gave, if you remember, a little rule of thumb for understanding who's senior or junior or whatever to oneself. Generally, I suggest to follow that more or less. Otherwise, you know, you're going to have to figure out what level is the devotee on. That can be difficult. It can be difficult figuring out what level you're on, let alone someone else who you don't really understand very clearly. So, as a simple rule of thumb, if someone's been a devotee longer than you, unless, you know, sometimes devotees who have been devotees longer than you, sometimes they may get into serious difficulty. It happens, and their whole spiritual situation gets just, you know, really seriously undermined. So then, of course, well, then, we might not, for example, inquire from them, you know, how do I progress in Krishna consciousness if they're having difficulty. Otherwise, generally, those who've been devotees longer than you, they're basically senior, etc., as we described earlier. But then you say, should we rather respect a devotee as just a devotee, or by the class of seniority? Well, we should respect all devotees. We should respect all devotees. Because they're devotees. Devotees are rare. They're very special. They're very special. And we should really try and keep that in our minds whenever we're dealing with devotees. But otherwise, to avoid, we spoke about this, to avoid sort of sometimes unpleasant or just unnecessary difficulties in relationships with devotees, we need to have some basic ideas of what levels they're on. Otherwise, you know, as we said, you may start inquiring from a junior devotee or a confused devotee. What should I do? How should I progress? How should I deal with this situation? And if you ask a confused person for advice, you will join them in their world of confusion. Yeah. Or you may try to instruct a senior devotee, these types of things. So there's definitely a need, and it's not that difficult generally to understand who's more senior, who's roughly on the same level, and who's junior, and then interact in simple terms with them like that. But the basic sort of foundational idea is, first thing, we respect all devotees. even, you know, to take it further, we should respect all living entities. But particularly we should respect all devotees. Yeah, start by respecting the devotees, and gradually one's capacity to respect may expand and start including those who are not devotees.
Hare Krishna. We got some about this one. Do we have to strive to develop good qualities, or do they develop automatically? Both, you could say, because in the process of devotional service, even in the list of good qualities of a devotee, one of the primary qualities is complete surrender to Krishna. So in the process of devotional service, if we're following spiritual master's directives, then automatically we're going to be engaged in activities in direction of the mode of goodness, good qualities. We may not feel compassionate, we may not feel humble, but the process of devotional service helps to cultivate that automatically. So by concentrating on, let's say, adhering to follow the path which is suitable to our particular position in devotional service, then it's natural that in that association, keeping good association, that the good qualities will follow. By following instructions or personal association with pure devotee, one imbibes their qualities step by step. So they were naturally developed. So it's a bit of both. They develop naturally because they're already there. The pure soul already has all the qualities, the good qualities of what we hear of the devotee, are already there, just covered over. And in the association of the pure devotees and pure devotional service, the heart gradually becomes pure. So you have to make your endeavor to engage yourself appropriately in relevant activities of devotional service. And gradually our heart will become purified, and naturally the already existing qualities of the Vaishnava will manifest step by step. And that is how we put Krishna in the center. That's how surrendering to Krishna means to taking shelter of the instruction or the guidance of the senior, of the spiritual master, and so on. And the Lord's working into his direction. Hare Krishna.
How to move away from association that is detrimental to our spiritual development without causing offences? Well, I think Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj was speaking about this, about one of the Goswamis, I think it was Raghunath Bhattar. If he heard any...
That was this morning, one of the slides.
Yeah.
The slide show.
Oh, right. So he would immediately leave that area where there was some offence being caused by, you know, devotees speaking together. So it's not really, you know, a consideration that we just have to not associate with that, because even though we may not believe what's being said, and we may not think it's affecting us, but it does. It starts to, it's another, what they call, samskara in the mind. And it's there and it's waiting for an opportune moment just to actually manifest when we hear something else. And then, when we start to hear something about a devotee, it automatically changes our perception. So, you know, we just cannot afford to stay in that association, really. Of course, if we're experienced, we can try to reverse that kind of conversation. But we have to judge whether, these individuals are capable of accepting what we're saying. But best is not to... If we realise that, you know, devotees are being offended by a certain association, and best to avoid it by all means. We don't have to explain why we're avoiding, but we just keep away. And obviously, we are not in a position to tell others what to do. If we're, you know, if we're a spiritual authority, then we can check the situation. But if we're not their authority, it's best not to you know, directly approach somebody with their authority to deal with it. And that saves unnecessary, you know, problems as a result of conflict between you and the other person. And, you know, for ourselves, if we realise that's happening, then we have to instigate a mood of, a positive mood, by our behaviour and about the way we speak, and that will start to change the, you know, the way, you know, we can also counteract that by giving the opposite behaviour.
That was a very good answer. I like that. Are mistakes in our relationships inevitable? Yes.
No.
Well, you know the symptoms of a conditioned soul, imperfect senses, illusioned, makes mistakes, and cheating propensity. So certainly while we are still conditioned souls, mistakes in our everything, including relationships, are inevitable. They simply are. But even in a devotional environment, even in a very elevated devotional environment, because this personal exchange is going on, emotions are involved, and so on. In a very pure situation, transcendental mistakes will be there sometimes. You know the example Prabhupada gives in Nectar of Devotion of a transcendental mistake by Krishna?
Yeah, Krishna was, he started, I can't remember if he was looking at the gopis or he was with, and he started milking a bull.
Yes, that's it. Krishna started milking a bull because he was just so fascinated by the gopis. So it's a mistake, but it's transcendental. And normally transcendental mistakes will not really be destructive. They may enhance the whole transcendental situation, but material mistakes arising out of our material consciousness, they will sometimes, often, whenever, they'll be destructive and have negative effects. So, therefore, we got to, like Prabhupada makes the point, if someone's a Kanishtha Adhikari, they're going to have misconceptions, material conceptions, make many mistakes. Prabhupada says, you must get out of being a Kanishtha Adhikari as quickly as possible. So we should get out of our, you know, like really conditioned state where we make these destructive mistakes. We should get out of that as soon as we can. Otherwise, from time to time, it's just we're going to end up with a little bit of stool in our faces, unfortunately. Hare Bol.
In regards to the relationship between devotees and conflict resolution, what can we do if, for instance, there is a lack of humility and one devotee thinks that the offense is against me, and the other one should apologize, and vice versa. So none of them want to lose their stand. Hare Krishna, why have we come to this movement if we're not willing to ask forgiveness, if we're not willing to recognize the need to ask for forgiveness, then how will we make spiritual progress? We're not here just to make our stand. Been making us down for a long time. What's the result of that? What's the result?
We're in the material world.
Yeah, we keep falling down again and again. So what's the point? Holding on to it. Even if we're right, in one sense, even if we justify it. Still, if there's causing any harm to anyone else or whatever, there's every reason to apologize. I'm really sorry if my behavior is causing you any distress. I don't understand it, maybe, but please forgive me. You know, if we can't at least make that effort, there is very little chance of us getting out of that canister stage, or that material stage. You have to realize what we're here for. We're not here to make our stand. We're here to stand for Krishna. We're here to do that which pleases Krishna. So, without humility, how can we advance in Krishna consciousness? This is the one way that we can start to awaken the natural quality of humility within our hearts. I seem to, yes, please forgive me. We always ask, isn't it? Please forgive me for my offensive obeisances and forgive my humble offences, isn't it? No. Please forgive me for my offensive obeisances and accept my humble offences. Something like that. I wonder why he said that to me. You know, we have to walk our talk, you know. We've got to go, you know, we've got to have to depend on Krishna. We go, look at us. Where are we going? Just holding on to our conditioned natures isn't going to do much good to us. If you're really interested in yourself, just let it down. Just let it down. I just remember once in the match, saying this to this night, I remember in Malaysia, when there were any Ramshan, he's the married to Janaki, you may not have missed it. And whenever anyone would come criticizing or saying anything negative, and they said, oh, they're such a nice devotee, they would just immediately start glorifying that devotee. And believe me, whoever was criticizing would walk away immediately. End of conversation. That's a sign that they're really not serious about it. They're just, you know, negative. But, you know, talking positively, being positive, we're here to encourage each other. We're here to get rid of our stands and to, you know, take shot at Krishna's stand. So please don't take that seriously. It's not a question of right and wrong so much. It's just a question of what's doing good for us for our spiritual life. And it's always good to ask for forgiveness, even if we're right. If somebody else is upset, ask for forgiveness. Hare Krishna.
Our Shiva and Brahma conditioned souls. So Lord Brahma is in the category. Well, Lord Brahma can be in two categories. Lord Brahma can be a conditioned soul, or it can be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If there's no qualified person to take over Lord Brahma's position, then Lord Vishnu does it. Lord Brahma generally is also conditioned in the material world. But Lord Shiva is different. He's like a milk which is transformed into yogurt. He's the same quality as, it's coming from the same source, but it's slightly different. So Lord Shiva is in a category of his own called Shiva Tattva. And his position is to is to regulate the material world. His consort is Durga Devi, who's the superintendent of the material world, but he's also the master of Durga Devi. So Lord Shiva is the form of Lord Vishnu who deals with the material world. So Lord Vishnu doesn't touch the material world directly, but it's enacted through Lord Shiva. And you know, Lord Shiva's in a superior position to Lord Brahma also. He's a higher tattva. Lord Brahma is usually Jiva tattva, and Lord Shiva is Shiva tattva.
Jananda Maharaj was talking about the devotee. What was it? please accept my humble offences or something. I once was with a devotee and he got mixed up between nectar of devotion and nectar of instruction, saying, you know, I read this, and he said, yeah, I read Nectar of Destruction. Devotion, instruction.
Wow. There's sometimes a little bit like that. We think we're getting nectar from destruction.
Anyway, okay. Here's the question. And it's just, there's a little bit of a lack of grammatical clarity. I'll sort of paraphrase as it appears to me. Some of the senior devotees scare you, telling you that you're offending Krishna. It's related to, or perhaps it's almost the same as a question Jananda Maharaj, I think, answered some minutes ago. The thing I would say is, look, you know, senior devotees, come on, please. Please, you know. You got to think. You really got to think. We got to help these younger devotees, not sort of crush them or just sort of harass them and frighten them. We want them to feel, hey, I'm in the right place. After being in material life and having a hard time, now I came to the right place. Now I'm with the right people. Wow, this is where I should be. I'm so happy I'm here. Yeah. And if someone is making some offense, or say, doing something wrong, which is all, more or less inevitable, but you don't have to tell them, oh, you're offending Krishna. You're gonna, if you don't stop this immediately, you'll turn into a pumpkin. No, really. There are ways of correcting people nicely so they feel that, oh, this person is helping me, rather than this person is bashing me or something along those lines. So senior devotees, please, you know, you really got to try and sort of deal with devotees in that type of way.
Hare Krishna, how should we approach or inquire when the mind is materially contaminated? That's probably the time when we should approach or inquire. When we're in a contaminated state, and because we're all contaminated. Who's not contaminated? Whose mind is not contaminated somewhat by the material energy? So that is the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita, to inquire how we're going to deal with the conditioned nature of our existence. We have to approach the right person. We have to approach and inquire when the mind is materially contaminated. Well, another way Prabhupada says, if we're not sure, at least we can associate and we can read and study Srila Prabhupada's books. They're always there. As all the questions are answered in Prabhupada's books. So at least we can read Srila Prabhupada's books as much as we can. If our mind is too contaminated and we're too disturbed, that's another thing that we can inquire personally and see what we can do. Maybe some devotional service is required, some practical devotional service. To engage our restless mind or contaminated mind, to gradually develop by serving the devotees, we gradually develop an attraction for hearing and chanting about Krishna. And we're all contaminated, so seeing what is the appropriate service, that inquiry, as I said, the only inquiry you have to make is that inquiry, how can I serve you? And that should primarily how we can engage in devotional service. We need the assistant, usually assistant in Krishna consciousness, is there to give us some kind of authoritative system, what it may, but some kind of system in place whom we can approach and ask for service, or ask for good particular guidance in certain situations which we may find ourselves in. Hare Krishna.
Does Krishna only belong to the pure devotee or initiated devotee? So, Krishna is available for everybody, and to the degree that, you know, we reciprocate with Krishna, then Krishna becomes dear to us, and we become dear to Krishna. So, you know, Krishna is captured by pure devotional service. So to the degree that we render pure devotional service to Krishna, then we become, Krishna's captured by that pure devotional service. There's actually one verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, I can't remember the Sanskrit, but it's explained that, Krishna's explained that, he's talking to the gopis, and he says that, you know, we approach devotional, I can't remember the first part, but the second part explains that he's saying to the gopis, you're in a different category. He says, but by your loving attitude towards me, you've actually purchased me. So, you know, this is the efficacy of pure devotional service, and it's available to everybody. You know, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, we can have pure devotional service in a moment if we want it. We may not get it for so many lifetimes. So, you know, in one respect, you know, Krishna is available to everybody, but to the one who fully engages in loving devotional service, then there's a relationship. Krishna says, I'm in the heart of the devotee, and the devotee is always in my heart. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
How do you differentiate between a senior devotee and a neophyte? Anyway, I think we've discussed that pretty much. But here's another little element. Does aging mean you are a senior devotee? That's an interesting point. One aspect of aging, just by the way, aging is considered to be an opulence as opposed to youth, in the sense of you have experience, and experience is such a teacher. It's really amazing, actually. But otherwise, we should treat older people with respect. We should treat everyone with respect, actually. I mean, particularly the devotees. So if we have older, you know, physically older devotees, even if they, you know, haven't been devotees so long, and you're, you know, say you're 26, and you've been a devotee 6 years, and someone else is 66, and they just became a devotee a year ago. What are you going to do, 26-year-old? Are you going to go up and say, hey,
boy.
Junior devotee?
Hey, boy, come over here. Wash the toilet.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you don't treat people like that. It's just a matter of common sense to deal nicely and respectfully with people, particularly devotees. But as they famously say, you know, the problem, you know what the problem with common sense is?
It's
not so common. Yeah. It's a serious problem. So we should be respectful towards all devotees, but when people are materially older, particularly if they're devotees, but anyway, really, but particularly devotees, definitely we should be a little extra careful to be nice in our dealings with them.
Yeah, thank you, Raja. Reminds me of Prabhupada, how Prabhupada would deal with elderly people, even though he was old himself. He would always treat them very, very respectfully, make sure they had seats and so on. He was very conscious in teaching us this principle, respecting elderly people appropriately to their needs. So I just like to serve, but don't like to read. Can I still make advancement? Certainly can, because what are we reading? Of course, again, quality of the service and the attitude Prabhupada says in our devotional service is very important. Because the principle is, we just like to serve, and we're serving without expectation. We still have some, but the more our service is purified, it's the consciousness, the attitude when we read, the attitude when we chant, the attitude with the nine types of devotional service, the attitude when we render practical service, everything like that, is really the deciding factor, the monitor, you could say, of the reciprocation of how Krishna reciprocates with us so that we can advance. It's by the mercy of Krishna that we advance, not by the mechanical application. It depends entirely on the mercy of the Lord Prabhupada. The dormant awakening of our love for Krishna does not depend at all upon the mechanical process of hearing and chanting. It depends wholly and solely upon the mercy of the Lord. So if we're in that mood of dependence on Krishna, whether we're reading, whether we're chanting, that's great. But if we're proud, and if we get affected when somebody says something, etc., etc., then we have a little bit more work to do. But it's not dependent on that. But the point of rendering service, the more we render service, we will be happy to hear, even if we haven't got the natural ability to read and study and so on and so forth. But the principle of reading and studying is to engage us anyway in 24 hours devotional service, one of the nine limbs of devotional service. But we shouldn't shirk away from, when the opportunity comes there to hear and chant. We should take advantage of hearing in the association of devotees and not avoid it. Because otherwise, in a neophyte stage especially, our intelligence sometimes gets unclear. We don't really understand some of the principles of dealings, principles of, etiquette and so on and so forth. It's important to also try to imbibe those in our practical application of devotion. So in a nice community of devotees, those things will automatically be present. And in fact, in the early years of the movement, when you're rendering service, you're also chanting and hearing at the same time. It's not one or the other. Devotees will be chanting at the same time. They'll be discussing Krishna Katha at the same time. You automatically hear it. You'll be singing songs which describe the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and so on. So it's best if it's not just one or the other, but both. And they can both go on nicely, simultaneously. Hare Krishna.
We celebrate birthdays in the temple, then why don't we celebrate important devotees, demigods? That's such as Shiva, Hanuman, etc.
You seem to be getting a lot about the demigods in your list here.
Why don't we celebrate their appearance in the temple? Lord Shiva is the highest level of Krishna devotee. Then why can't we respect him on our altar? There are millions of advanced devotees. But we follow, Lord Shiva as a sampradaya is so elevated. But we're not in Lord Shiva's sampradaya, we're in Lord Brahma's sampradaya. And even though we're in the Brahma Madhava Gaudiya sampradaya, we don't put Lord Brahma on the altar. You just can't put everybody on there. But, so the acharyas, they put the prominent devotees on the altar, so that we can actually develop a certain mood of devotional service. And that's a process of disciplic succession, that we don't speculate, but we follow their advice. And by following their guidance, we develop according to the mood of that particular sampradaya. So we have, from Prabhupada through to Jagannath Das Babaji. But we don't have all the in-between acharyas. And then we come to Lord Nrisingadev. Why Lord Nrisingadev? Why not Kurma or Matsya? Because that's the mood of our sampradaya. And then we have Radha Krishna or Ronitai or Panchatattva. Other sampradayas may worship Lord Gauranga and Gadadha, like that. So, yeah, Lord Shiva should be... Well, you know, it's not to say that we don't respect all the other demigods. Like Meghan Chaitanya Maharaj was saying, that we respect every living entity. But on the altar, we put prominent personalities in our particular sampradaya.
What would your advice be for someone considering a change of ashram, brahmachari to grihastha? Well, here's a little tongue-in-cheek answer. Don't. Problem solved. But life being life, it may not be so simple. It's not as simple as, shall I have another samosa or not? That's something you can take it or leave it. Okay, here's some advice. Because some devotees, I mean, not just some, but many, or even most, they do need to be in a grihastha type of a grihastha situation for their progress and stability in Krishna consciousness. So here's some advice. Would be, in terms of choosing, you know, looking for candidates, good idea, looking for candidates and just the whole program of switching and, yeah, preparing, is get guidance from the senior grihasthas. I mean, ideally there should be, and it's happening more and more here and there in ISKCON, but not that much. They have like family, some sort of department like that, where the devotees who are very experienced householders, and they can give guidance, and they may have like lists of devotees who've come to them and who want to find a suitable partner, and the senior devotees can actually help in constructive ways connecting people up together in Krishna consciousness, rather than simply, oh, she looks good to me, I look good to her, let's get together. This is often a recipe for disaster, actually. Oh, yeah. So we need this. We need senior grihasthas to get together and help the younger devotees, because it is, if not, it's not actually universal, but we're talking about 90% or plus of devotees who need to do this and who will do it one way or the other. So best if they do it in a systematic, mature, Krishna-conscious way with the help of qualified devotees. And one devotee I saw actually I saw on the internet several months ago, a devotee wrote, you know what? My wife just gave me the biggest compliment she's ever given me. It was a Prabhupada disciple. They had been married for, 30 or 40 years. She just gave me the greatest compliment she's ever given me. She told me, you're actually quite a good husband. I wouldn't mind being your wife in our next lifetime.
Can you tell us your best moments you've had in ISKCON? What would you say if someone asked you that? When you suddenly found yourself alone with a big tray of gulags and laddus. That was my best one. I was long with two full trays of laddus. And I almost completed them entirely. Almost 140 laddus. It was a great moment.
Can you tell the story that came before that, though, Matt?
Pardon?
Can you tell the part that came before that, how
you
happened
really
to be
hear it? It's kind of, yeah, it's also a good moment.
It was funny.
Yeah, it's a bit funny. I was an old devotee. I'd been in the movement 3 months. I'm a senior devotee. I wasn't yet initiated, by the way, but I was still allowed to do devotional service. I had to drive the van. It was a beaten-up old Volkswagen that hardly worked. Nobody else had a license. I was the only one with a license in the temple. There's a driver's record of the vehicle here and there. So we drove down to Sussex somewhere for this program from London. In a young Christian's hall. Well, it was a group of young Christians. Above a pub somewhere in some village in Sussex. So we got down there and we brought about 3-4 trays of beautiful Ladanay Babumade. And, we had a kirtan, and left the kirtan. And then a devotee, another devotee gave, I won't mention the name because you might know him, he gave a lecture. And they'd been in the movement a really long time. They'd been in the movement a month longer than me, so they were really senior. And they gave a lecture, and I was impressed by their lecture. It was really good. It lasted about 10 minutes, and didn't really know quite where they were going, but I don't think they did either. But anyway, the audience, the young Christians, they came with the proverbial question, in the Bible it says Jesus is the way, the truth, the light, no man should come to the Father but through me. Usual challenge. So, what have you got to say about that? I said, I can challenge you there. So the devotee said, well, I couldn't get it anything out, practically speaking, anything intelligible anyway. So another devotee who was getting about 9 months, I mean, really. So he took the reins very quickly and said, do you eat meat? What's his challenge to the audience? Do you eat meat? And the Christians all looked at each other thinking, no, it's just got to do with the question I just asked. No, come on, do you eat meat? Of course I do. You know, it's like, it's normal, right? Eating meat. What are you talking about? Of course they eat meat. Then you're as good as a pig! I'm not sure if pigs are meat, but meat eating, you could use the word pig. Very impressive answer. The best way to deal with such inquirers is to call them pigs, you know. And believe me, they all laughed. They soon got rid of the problem. Everybody looked at them, except for the one guy who organized it, who refused to give us any money to go back with. We depend on that. We didn't have a penny between us, and we had no petrol in the tank, so we were a bit marooned out there. So afterwards, we know nobody there to serve the preserve to honour the prasada, and actually no one except for us. So we did take quite a few each. So then we drove back to London in the van, and we got about three or four miles into the middle of nowhere, and the van just picked. It was like 9:30 at night by now, or something like that. It was freezing cold. It was like February or something, 72. It was freezing cold. And, what on earth are we going to do? Stuck there. No means. We had no telephone to phone to or nothing. So walking up and down the country lanes, when some people went to the local village, trying to get enrolled in the police station. They wouldn't let them, stay in the police station. Nothing. The little girls were just pacing up and down all night long, chanting Hare Krishna. And I was stuck in the van, but I had to look after the van. And I had all these ladder trays there, so very warm. And I realized after about 20 ladders, I was getting warm. I kept eating and eating, and I loved ladders. And I practically finished all the two trays, and I was in ecstasy. Maybe that was my best moment, I don't know. To be honest, I mean, those early days, they're like more memorable, and you really stick out like the good old days. But to be honest, I think the best times at ISKCON, if I look in reflection, I mean, every moment, Jayananda Prabhu used to say every day, every moment, well, that's the best prasadam I've ever tasted. But you said that yesterday. Yeah, but the days is the best. Every day is the best. Every moment, because every moment, hopefully we're advancing. Every moment we can learn something, so that's the best moment. You know, when we're advancing closer in Krishna consciousness, we should, when we let down our barriers and say, please forgive me, Prabhupada, that's a great breakthrough. You know, when we actually, you know, actually start to, you know, realize we are offenders, it's a big breakthrough. You know, these are great moments. Some of the greatest moments, like I would say, in my devotional association, have been the toughest moments at the time. You learn the most. You know, some, I'm not going to get into details, but some really tough experiences, and we can really learn a lot. Sometimes it's in relation with the devotee, and sometimes it's not. But, you know, Krishna gives us these lessons. When we learn the lessons which Krishna is trying to teach us, when we stick to our guns and don't listen, then, you know, they're not good moments. And when we learn those, when we learn our lessons, even in chanting Hare Krishna, we realize, wait a minute, what am I doing? I'm associating with Radha and Krishna, and I'm in another universe somewhere. You know, we get these flash, we get these kind of realizations. These are great moments. Every moment is a great moment, because they're all sent to heaven, especially those times. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Why Krishna did not go back to Vrindavan to meet Radha and the gopis, though he promised to go back when he left for Mathura? Well, externally, Krishna appeared to leave Vrindavan. But Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. It's, you know, Shyamasundar Krishna is always in Vrindavan, he's always reciprocating with the gopis. So when he left Vrindavan, it was on the border of Vrindavan and Mathura. He took the form, or he came out of Vrindavan as Vasudev Krishna. So that's one understanding. And there's also the Aprakat and the Prakat Leela. So Aprakat means unmanifested, and Prakat means manifested. So what we read about in the Krishna book is called the manifest Leela. But it's also understood that in the unmanifest Leela, Krishna was reciprocating with the gopis. Krishna doesn't leave Vrindavan. But, you know, but according to our perception and according to the pastime, he seems to leave Vrindavan. Hare Krishna.
Would you like to say anything?
Well, Jiva Goswami analyzes this at length. Did Krishna return to Vrindavan or not? And he gives all sorts of different evidences to establish that Krishna did return to Vrindavan, actually. Yeah. After the, what was it, Kurukshetra, the eclipse, the meeting at Kurukshetra. And he gives all sorts of different evidences. Like there's a verse in the Bhagavatam, I think first canto, which talks about how, it's talking about Dwarika Krishna, but it says quite simply and plainly that Krishna, he leaves here and he goes to Vrindavan and he goes to Mathura. So, yeah. Then he says things like, he promised the gopis he would. So that means he must go back because he promised. He won't break his promise to his devotee. How Krishna does not know about Radha's love and he has to come down to experience as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Yes. Interesting question. You know, the thing is, Well, we mentioned how Krishna is in this mood that he's God. Generally he's like that, in that sort of mood. There's a nice description in Chaitanya, what is it, Mangala, how Krishna in Goloka, in Dwarka, went to visit Rukmini. It's a long story, I won't go through the whole story, it's a really nice story. But Krishna, when Rukmini met Krishna at the door, she fell on his feet, crying and crying. And Krishna thought something was wrong. He said, "Have I offended you? Or what have I done?" And Rukmini said, No. "I'm just so happy to see you." And then she collapsed on his feet again, crying. And Krishna said, "Oh, I've offended you. Please tell me what I've done." And Rukmini said, No, you haven't. I'm so happy to see you." And this was going back and forth. And Krishna eventually said, "I just don't understand. What is it? What's the situation?" And Rukmini said, "Yes, my lord, that's the problem. You don't understand. Even though you are Sarvajna, you're all-knowing, but there's one thing you don't understand. You don't understand how much your devotees love you. And you can..." I'm paraphrasing because it's a bit of a long story, but it's really nice. And she says, she tells him, "There's only one way you'll understand. You have to become a devotee. But not just any devotee from Newcastle or Durham. You have to become Srimati Radharani. That's the only way." So, anyway, Radharani is part of Krishna. She's his internal pleasure potency, but now she's outside him. And therefore, in a certain sense, Krishna, because she's outside him, Krishna is not really so aware of her in detail, because she's outside, she's separated from him. But then Krishna experiences the love of Radharani, and it's so amazing. And then Krishna feels that I must become a devotee. And get out of, Krishna feels, I must get out of this position of being God. It's terrible. I must become a devotee. And then he becomes, or takes the role of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Without initiation, will a devotee be allowed to do the service to Krishna? Well, if we're not able to do service to Krishna, we'll never get initiated. Huh? We'll become initiated. Certainly, everyone's eligible for service in Mahura, even those who are not following regular principles, don't even know anything about Krishna, don't even believe in Krishna consciousness. Our eligible, Lord Chaitanya gave Krishna consciousness to everyone, whether they're willing or unwilling, or eligible or ineligible. Everyone's eligible to engage in devotional service. The details of devotional service may, be a little bit another subject matter. Obviously, for deity worship on the altar, and especially when you have temple installed deities, then there are certain considerations taken into place as to whether one's initiated or not. In most cases, in normal situations, there's no question of someone, because of course, again, even if someone's initiated, they're not following the principles, then there's another consideration. It's not just about being initiated or not initiated. There's also the, where level practices are. Our consciousness, I'll give you an example. In London in 1972, Srila Prabhupada, at that time we had very few Brahmins in the temple, and about London Ishwara, Prabhupada asked two girls, I think they were Sharmas, I think they were, to cook for Raghavendra and Ishwaran. They were not initiated. The Prabhupada asked them to do it. That wasn't a normal. But the Acharya asked them. Normal situations to cook for the deities is that initiation is normally, second initiation is normal. In different situations it may not be. So it's time and circumstance. But that's the general thing. But everyone's eligible to render service. And different services may require different eligibility, but in principle, everyone's eligible for some devotional service. Prabhupada had Jamuna helping to cook the first wedding feast for Mukunda and Janaki in 1966 in New York. She was still smoking, Prabhupada. She would go outside, Prabhupada. She would go out and said, Prabhupada would ask her to go outside and smoke and then wash your hands before you come back in. And so that was the standard, you know, wash your hands and come back in. And then we were a little bit higher than that. We don't want to stay on that level, but we hope anyway we can go a little higher than that. But in the beginning, that may be the standard. So we have to see what is appropriate to help the person to advance in Krishna consciousness. Without devotional service, we're never going to be advanced towards initiation. So we have to be engaged. Hare Krishna.
How can one balance between professional working life and devotional life without compromising one another? So it's dependent on your, you know, our level of advancement. But as quickly as possible, we should come to the point of implementing 16 rounds of four regulative principles in our life. And then we can be sure that, you know, we're taking full advantage of the process that Prabhupada gave us. And if we're finding that our material life is not allowing us to do that, we don't have time, then we should understand that, you know, we're maybe over-endeavouring in our material life. May not be the case, but generally it is. That, you know, Krishna's in the heart, and if we really want to follow the process, then he'll give the intelligence to make facility for that and give us the situation. It's a matter of what we desire. And so, you know, the real benchmark is if we come to the point of chanting 16 rounds and following the process properly and maintaining that, then it's balanced. And if we start to encroach on that spiritual side and put more time to material activities, then it'll become unbalanced. It'll just go the other way and we'll eventually lose our footing in practicing serious devotional service. I remember one story Prabhupada was explaining about. No, it wasn't Prabhupada, it was one of Prabhupada's servants. And I can't remember his name, but he had a business in Calcutta. And he was doing really well. But he was thinking, actually, Bombay is the best city to do business. I'll go to Bombay and we'll make more money for the movement. And so Prabhupada wasn't very happy with that. But anyway, he went to Bombay and he said from that time on everything went down, his spiritual life and his business. And so eventually he regathered himself together and he came back to Calcutta, and as soon as he started following the process properly, his business picked up and everything. So you know, if we have a good spiritual life, we'll never suffer materially. Actually, I know that from my experience, devotees who really concentrate on their spiritual life, they don't go without. And the more we don't concentrate on that, the more we'll actually think that we are the doer and we have to do certain things in order to maintain ourselves. So it's imperative that we, you know, chant 16 rounds and follow the four regulative principles in order to actually make this discrimination.
Is it true that you cannot perform or do kirtan if you do not do 16 rounds? No. It's sort of like, is it true that you cannot perform or do kirtan in the temple, in front of the deities, if you're not dressed in devotional clothes? That's an interesting question, isn't it? generally out of respect to Prabhupada's system, it would be better to do like that.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you one little story. Don't know if you know the story. You know the story about the death of John Lennon? You know that one?
Mm.
You know that. Anyway, let me just tell you as quickly as I can. It's kind of related. Kind of. That John Lennon was killed in New York. And in our temple at that time in New York, there were devotees. There was one devotee couple. The wife gave birth to a child. And about in the temple. And the child was okay, but after a week the child became sick. They took the child to a hospital, local hospital there in Manhattan. And there they are with the doctor. Suddenly out in the hallway there's all this commotion. Something's going on. What's happening? It's meant to be a hospital. It's like, wow. Noise and shouting. Husband went out to see. Went out into the foyer. There was Yoko Ono. And on a stretcher next to her was John Lennon. He had just been shot. And Yoko Ono said, "John, look, it's the Hare Krishnas." And John sort of looked and saw, and about a minute later he died.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and the devotee was dressed as a devotee, because in those days, you know, for the first so many years, I never wore anything other than devotional clothes. We never thought about it. But if, you know, like, can you perform kirtan if you're not wearing devotional clothes? If that devotee had been a Krishna West person and had been totally undercover and had come out there, Yoko Ono would not have said, "Oh, look, there's a Hare Krishna." So, anyway, my point is, it's nice to maintain devotional standards. So if you're not doing 16 rounds, you can do kirtan. Of course you can do kirtan in general. It would be better, your kirtan would be better if you did 16 rounds.
Does it mean lead kirtan or just...
I think, well, actually it says perform or do kirtan. Sounds like lead. And then, like I said, you could sort of extend it further. Is it true that you cannot perform or do kirtan in front of the deities if you're not wearing devotional clothes? I would say you can. It's not, you know, like you can't. But it would be better in front of the deities out of respect to wear devotional clothes. Hare Krishna.
Are the followers of Lord Shiva in person? Are the followers of Lord Shiva in personals? Depends on the attitude. You see Lord Shiva as the greatest devotee of the Lord. You see him in relationship to Lord Narayan. Or we just see him as an object to fulfill our desires. Especially if our desires are to merge into the impersonal man. There are no different types of impersonal. Some are Maya values, some are Karma values. Depends on the individual. Then Lord Shiva has his own personal associates. There are and others who they're just like, you know, expansions in a sense of the various offices of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He also has Parvati and Nandi and others who are his eternal associates. They're not impersonal as such, they're personal in their own way. They're servitors of Lord Shiva in his service to Lord Krishna. It depends on the attitude of the person. But generally people who approach Lord Shiva, and oftentimes at least, if not always, they usually have an impersonal objective in their lives to fulfill. They're worshipping Lord Shiva, the Virgin, the Brahma Jyoti, generally, or something like that. However, some of them may be ignorant, they just don't know. And when they come in contact with the real understanding or the real devotees or whatever it is, then they may not be adamantly attached to their impersonalist of mentality. So it depends on their attitude. If not everybody's an impersonalist, but generally speaking, that's usually the case with women. The worshippers of Lord Shiva are mostly of the impersonal school, and the worshippers of Krishna are mostly of the personal school. It's not absolute.
Just similar to one which was said earlier. If senior devotees, advanced devotees, are not tolerant enough how to handle the situation by new beginners, how does it give motivation?
Can you read that again, Maharaj? Sorry, I didn't
get it. If senior devotees, advanced devotees, are not tolerant enough how to handle situation by a new devotee or new beginners. I think it means how does the
new devotees
deal with it? How does it give motivation? So I think like Chaitanya Maharaj answered that earlier, that, you know, there's, I'll just reiterate what he said. He said, you know, the senior devotees have to learn how to deal with newcomers, otherwise how are we going to, you know, expand the movement? Everybody will be put off at the very beginning.
The senior devotee's responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, we have to, I mean, one way, I mean, it's very difficult. I know when I came to the movement, I started reading about the, you know, the nature of instruction, how it says there's different relationships, and automatically I thought, oh, it's better, you know, a senior devotee, it's easy. You know, he just gives mercy, that's all he has to do. But actually, that's one of the most difficult things to do. It's very difficult. And so we have to take it as a service, that it's not necessarily that we feel good about having to, you know, deal with other people's problems, but it's a duty. It's a service to Krishna. We have to see it that way. Otherwise it will be difficult.
This is the last one, Marsh.
This is the last one of mine, yeah. Difference between devotion and spiritualism. That's a good question. Spiritualism, if you take it to mean just like spiritual things, sometimes the term spiritualism is used to refer to things to do with ghosts, seances, and all that sort of stuff. But if we take spiritualism to mean things which are, in terms that we recognize philosophically as being spiritual, then like things to do with the soul, then spiritualism in that context includes impersonalism, because impersonalism is spiritual. It's trying to realize the nature of the soul in a certain sense. Whereas devotion is spiritual, definitely spiritual, but it's in this context, devotion is one aspect of spiritualism. Whereas in spiritualism in this context is like a broader type of concept of anything which is spiritual, anything to do with the soul, which includes impersonal conceptions, like in conceptions related to the super soul and yoga, realizing the super soul, and then devotion, being a devotee and serving Krishna. So therefore you could say in that context, devotion is a type of spiritualism. Of course, you know, if we look at it like that, it's not just the best type, but ultimately it's the only really real type. because those who are impersonalists, they being an impersonalist is already, even though some would say it's spiritual, but in a certain sense it's already a fallen condition. So real spirituality then would mean devotion, devotional service to the Lord.
This is the last question in the hat. Hare Krishna, what seems normal to one can be an offence to another. How to balance this? What really is an offence if the messenger was just talking casually or considered it normal? The messenger. The devotee who represents, I suppose. Well, one man's meat is another man's poison, there's no doubt. We're on different levels of growth in Krishna consciousness. There'll be certain levels, certain activities, certain platforms where there's coming together, and it's kind of like we're all doing the same thing, basically. On other levels, there's, you know, some devotees are still, let's say, different levels, different conditionings, and so on and so forth. So they accept that as being a kind of normal way of interacting. Maybe that's why Vedic culture, there is, we don't have such a system, practically speaking, in most of our small centers, particularly, where there is a culture, a Varnashram culture. There has to be a culture and society to accommodate different people, different stages, who have different needs. They may even be different rules for different fools and so on and so forth are there in terms of people. But the whole idea is to elevate people. And the senior devotees are, senior persons in society are expert. Just like if you have children, you learn how to encourage the child at certain stages. The child will be doing things which will not be appropriate at a more mature stage. But the child will not be condemned for that, as we've been hearing from us. Rather be encouraged to gradually mature, Is it the senior devotee or the, and as far as, is it an offence? Well, again, it would be considered an offence for a child, 16-year-old, not saying offence, but it would be inappropriate to pass stool in its pants. But for a 2-month-old baby, that would not be considered to be an offensive thing or an inappropriate behaviour. So we have to see what the level of the person is and try to gradually encourage them to come to a more mature stage of consciousness, a more mature stage of being, etc., etc. Obviously, what seems normal to one can be an offence to another. How to balance this? Well, that's the society that we live in. It's supposed to be for this purpose, to facilitate the gradual growth of devotees with a certain amount of tolerance and a certain amount of encouragement. Side by side, you don't just cut people because they seem to be into something other, but we gradually try to dovetail or channel their activities in the service of Krishna, try to take with it and try to bring it into a more Krishna conscious framework and so on and so forth, so they can gradually realize and gradually advance, and not necessarily to cut people off. It's not necessary if they don't know, they're in a kind of ignorant stage. If we purposely are doing it to irritate another, then it becomes an offence. If we know that devotee gets upset if we talk about something, then it becomes offensive. But if it's innocent, basically don't know, due to conditioning, it's not really an offence, it's just immaturity. And what's really an offence? The messenger is just talking casually and considers it normal. So if he just considers it normal, that means the state that we're on, that particular stage of maturity, that's a normal thing to do. You see people in general, it's normal for them to be. Prabhupada often say, even when they're staying with Sally Agarwal and Rupal Agarwal, they were smoking and eating meat pellets, they think nothing of it. They didn't take it seriously. They just think nothing of it. And if that stays there, then they would just encourage them to do something good, take prasad, maybe chant Hare Krishna, whatever it may be. And we have to see like that. Not that we start eating meat and smoking cigarettes thinking that's okay then. But we try to, everything is arranged to try to help us to mature and advance in our Krishna consciousness. And that's where we have sanghas. We may be a mixed bunch, sometimes it's like that, different levels we have. But coming together and chanting and hearing together and sharing and being considerate and, you know, like that, and being humble and tolerant, it's something we can all practice and which will help us to all mature, help this movement to become sound and solid and very attractive. We can learn from the drama also. Had Maharaj Ambarish was so exemplary in his behavior and his reactions, etc., etc. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.
No,
it's not good. Okay.
I think that was the last question. So I'd like to thank all the devotees for their nice questions, and I'd like to thank the Maharajas for their wonderful answers. And just before we retire for the night, just to give you the revised schedule for tomorrow. Let's see if we can stick to that one. So we're pretty much going to carry on with the morning program as we did this morning. So 5 o'clock will be Mangalati till 5:30. Then 5:30 till 7 will be Japa. 7 to 7:30 Srila Prabhupada's Guru Puja and Kirtan. And then the class will be from 7:30 till 8:45. It'll be 1 hour 15 instead of 1 hour 30, just because we're a little short of time. And the first class will be by His Holiness Dayananda Swami. And then we're going to have a breakfast, and a reasonably light breakfast, from 8:45 till 9:30. And there'll just be a 15-minute break. And then at 9:45 we'll come back here for the second of the day. But the final seminar by His Holiness Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, that'll go through till 11 o'clock. Unfortunately, we're going to be losing His Holiness Jananda Goswami, but we wish
him. I'm going out in the middle of the night, is it? I'm going to get lost on the
road. You shouldn't joke about that. That did happen to one devotee last 2 years ago. I won't name his name, but he's a good friend of mine, and in fact we had to call Mountain Rescue. I'll tell you who it was in private, but anyway, that did happen. So don't anyone go off wandering in the night on a japa walk, because you may not come back. Anyway, we're going to be losing Maharaj in the sense that he's not going to be with us for the final sessions. We wish him well on his journey. And then at 11 o'clock, we're going to then conclude with some reflections. We want devotees to give their reflections, things that they've stuck in their mind from the retreat, a point you've heard, or some nice experience, something like that, a nice kirtan or a nice cauliflower pakora, right? Whatever it was, and then we'll do some thank yous. And the idea is that we have to be out of our rooms by 12 o'clock. We don't need to be out of the premises, but at least rooms. So at that point, we'll go upstairs, pack our things, take the bedding off, and we have to put that in the corridors. And what I just want to ask is...
I was going to say put the bedding in the corridors.
Yeah, yeah, no problem. We'll remind again tomorrow. But also, I just wanted to find out, because some devotees have told me that they're going to be leaving in the early morning. So we were thinking to serve a lunch, prasadam, at 12 o'clock before devotees go on the way once we've cleared the room. So can I just have a show of hands to see who would actually like to take prasadam at 12 o'clock, or if some are going beforehand. Put your hands up if you would be wanting to take prasadam at 12. Okay, perhaps an easy way. Okay, put your hands up if you're leaving before that and you don't need prasadam. Okay, so it's just Garang and Amrin. Okay, that's great. So that's what we'll do. We'll serve prasadam at 12. And then for those who can stay and help, we'll just need a little hand just to rearrange things. There'll be a lot of washing up in the kitchen and just generally tidying things up back to how they came. Or as we said, a Brahmin should leave the place cleaner when they leave than when they came. So like that. Anyway, Thank you very much for all of your attendance throughout the day. Everyone's been here for all the programs. We really appreciate it. It's been a long day. So, you know, go and take rest and come back renewed and afresh for tomorrow morning.
You mentioned reflections. We also can remember the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. And a lot of the things we experience in this material world in our perverted form have their pure form in the spiritual world. You're hearing about Krishna making mistakes and this and that. All kinds of things. And there are many pastimes, and active devotion is full of transcendental psychology and dealing with all kinds of things. And just by hearing, sometimes just by hearing, we did a presentation last week on that we did that years ago, I remember, Demons in Krishna Lila. Mm-hmm. I remember that like 10, 20 years ago. And we did it again a few weeks ago, a week or so ago, I remember. But, it's amazing when you hear those, it actually helps us to deal with specific anartas which we may have, different offensive mentality and so on. Even without any other ado, it does help. So, you know, hearing these wonderful pastimes of Krishna killing demons and Balaram killing demons and so on in spiritual life. It has not just a story form, but it has a practical, actual practical effect in our devotional lives too. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki.